those damn abrupt endings that drive me absolutely nuts. Can you hear yourself?
Hello.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to the wonderful and frightening world of Patrick Michaelishan here on CKW 95.9 FM. Oh, my God. Do my eyes deceive me? It's Leif Norman.
Hey, I'm wearing a pink shirt.
Hey, this guitar pedal that I'm tweaking is not quite as pink.
Tweaky pink pedal knob twiddler you. Sounds nice. What was that song we just heard there?
That was Affine Repetition by Ad N2X. It was a long one, so I only played one to start the show.
Sounds mathematic.
Dude, where the hell have you been?
I've been out and about.
Did you end up getting to Saskatchewan on the motorcycle?
Oh, no. No. The weather went bad.
It's supposed to rain tomorrow, and it's going down 11 degrees from
crazy.
Today.
Yeah, no, today was amazing. No, the motorcycle was actually acting weird, so I didn't quite get out there. I'm just going to go to Brandon first or something like that.
Easy as.
You know, just in case something bad happens, because I still don't trust the stupid thing.
Fair.
So, yeah, but I've got the other Kawasaki. It's out and about, tearing around. Good times. Zoom, zoom.
Very cool.
Try not to kill myself on a motorcycle.
With these potholes?
No, it's just other drivers pulling out in front of you.
So I'm on just off of Maryland, and we have a cycling lane, but it's not barriered off. I was with my cousin the other day, and she was dropping me off at home, and there was a car just pulled over, and it was during rush hour. It was just a car was pulled, and the hazard lights on during rush hour in the bike lane, and there were four cyclists who couldn't get around because it's rush hour traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was
typical.
The douchiest move. And I don't know if it was a skip the dishes guy or what. There's a house on Maryland where when I was doing the radio show last week, and it happened a couple of times since, where if I'm out like 3 o'clock in the morning, midnight, whatever, there's like seven people in this yard and there are bicycles galore. And it's just like people coming and going. And I want to think that it's like a nice wholesome thing of just like local. No. But I want
those situations always end in house fires and gunshots.
Yeah, I mean, yes,
I've seen it.
Yeah, wow.
Well, any, I've got this like little bingo chart that I play in my neighborhood about. Are the doors and windows wide open in January? Check. What else? Do they never have their front light on, even if it's at night? Check.
Do they never have it, or do they always
never
have it?
No, never. No, 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 no lights whatsoever. What else is the other bingo thing? Like just garbage everywhere.
That's what. I mean, that's what my yard looks like right now, and I really gotta take care of it. But I'm waiting for it to get
warmer.
That
was the wind.
Oh man! No, someone knocked over my recycling, and they haven't taken my recycling for the last 3 weeks because my bins just never close. I think someone. Because I have to put it into the back lane, basically.
Yeah.
But it was up the hump of my driveway, so they haven't taken it. And then someone actually kicked over my recycling bin, and it was mostly, like, cat food, like Whiskas containers.
Just tins.
So it was
everywhere.
Just, like, these hockey puck-sized tins that were just making a mess of absolutely everything.
Like an old cat lady.
Oh, it's so gross. But no, now that the recycling is going, like, I've been taking stuff out of the house and having like fires and burning cardboard and paper that I don't need, and everything is getting good. I have to get rid of this. I've got this old DuPont television in my house that my ex and I got together, and we used it for like a Halloween photo shoot, and it turns on. But
oh,
just,
that's that super vintage one.
That super vintage one. Yeah, I don't want it anymore.
Somebody on Marketplace will give you some money for it.
I've seen them going for around $100. But yeah. It's just so heavy that I need to get it out of there. I've got these three giant wooden shelves that were in my childhood home, and my cousin's going to bring them over. And they actually fit perfectly in my dining room against, like, they flank the window. And I have, like, a modern, vintage-looking credenza. And they're just going to flank them. And they're so tall. I'm going to put some speakers on top. It's going to look so good. And it's going to give me so much more storage for the house. But I got to get that damn TV out. And they're so frickin' heavy.
I'll just stick it up on. I've got a 1950s radio that I've been trying to get rid of, and nobody wants it. It's you know.
Does it work?
No.
Oh.
It worked when I bought it, and then something just went in it, and it died.
Hmm.
So I don't know, but yeah, you got to get some proper speaker monitors for your new studio.
Yeah, I know. There's
come on, get some Mackies.
I think I have those cheap Mackies that are probably going to be replaced. So my insurance
way too small.
My insurance guy said that they were just going to throw out everything they took from that room, all the electronic stuff, and that includes like the Chorus Echo, that $3,500 tape Echo that I have.
Hell no.
My two Omnicords. I'm like, no, return everything. He says he's like, fine, we'll return everything. But our guy is like, this is all electronics. So he's like, I'm just going to put a recommendation in to write it all off and give you replacement value, which is great because if the stuff still works, I might come out on top, basically.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, geez, what, they're going to throw away that vintage Space Echo? That's insane.
Yeah, because it didn't even get wet. It was just in the same room as the asbestos.
Oh, God.
So
stupid.
But I'm still waiting for my stuff to come back, and it's kind of driving me nuts.
I hope they haven't just thrown it.
No. And if they do, then I show them what it is. Because like just the two Omnicords and the Space Echo,
that's a lot of money.
$5,200.
Yeah.
But then my three Tascams are in there too. So two of them are cassette Tascams. One's like the big four track that Frusciante used for his first two albums, and the other one's a slightly smaller one. And then I got the digital one, the DP-OX1.
Yeah.
Crazy. Hey, I don't know if I told you, I'm doing a 20-minute set on I think May 26th live at XQ's.
Oh yeah. You told me. That's cool.
Yeah, it's Chris Bauer from the Sane Radio Hour asked me if I wanted to do 20 minutes. He's doing something with I think Jay Taylor's in his group, who's like this ridiculously amazing bassist. When Damo Suzuki, rest in peace, played at the West End Cultural Center, it was two guys, I think, from Absent Sound, and then Chris Bauer on drums and Jay Taylor on bass, and they were the most intense rhythm section, just improv, locked in with each other. So they're doing a thing, but it's like an audio-visual night. Apparently, it's all being filmed. I'm still going to bring my Zoom and, you know, record what I perform. Yeah. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm thinking about just doing like a small setup. Like, this sounds amazing right now.
Yeah, just do that. And then take off all your clothes and dance around.
Yeah, it's going to be a spectacle.
With lasers.
I'm going to do laser nipple tassels.
Pasties.
Yeah.
Should I rent a smoke machine?
Yeah, I can get you involved, and you have to wear that pink shirt. But nothing else.
Nothing
you have to,
but like, just the pink shirt.
You have to Winnie the Pooh it up. Just
two,
the shirt.
Two triggers, either hand, with smoke machines.
I love it. We'll get you like Hulk hands, but we'll...
The Hulk hands? Oh, wow.
Like the Hulk foam hands, but we'll paint them skin tone.
Wow.
And, okay.
Too much.
No.
It's crazy.
Just enough.
Okay.
Anyways.
Will there be video projections?
There will be projections. I don't know what I'm going to do for it. Like, they have everything set up, so I just have to make my own 20-minute video. So I can whip that together relatively quickly and easily. I just got to figure out what I want to do.
Cute.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. So I'll let...
I think I'm back in town then. I think.
I'll keep you posted.
Yeah. I might be like... just east of Thunder Bay at that moment. I'm not so sure.
Where are you guys going camping again?
Yeah, we're driving all the way out to Quebec City.
Are you taking Campy?
Oh, yeah. No. Sorry. Campy is still not totally operational. Okay. Campy has been this long... Campy.
This millstone around your neck.
Well, it's a good thing. It's just I don't have enough time to deal with it. We're talking about a 1977 Dodge 22-foot-long camper van that I bought coming up to 2 years ago now, and basically have done nothing but fix it the whole time.
Wait, have you been doing the show with me for over 2 years?
I guess.
Oh, yeah, you have, because I met you near the start of that relationship, and it's been over for like over a year now.
I guess so.
Wow, no, we've been close.
On the radio for quite some time.
Good friends for a bit, so
woo!
That's pretty dope.
Yeah, so no, we're not taking Campy, we're just taking the Kia Soul and just camping the whole way and Airbnb-ing it the whole way. And we're going to go to Lac Megantic.
Sounds like magnetic.
No, it's Megantic. It's the site of, it's a cute little... a town just southeast of Quebec City, and I've never been to that rural part of Quebec province before, and it's the site of the Canada's worst rail disaster.
Oh.
I mean, it's not... They cleaned up. They clean the place.
It's not
up.
Like they're just waiting.
It's not like they left all the charred.
Well, I love how we had that accident here near Central Park where the lightning hit the church tower.
And then they just put
a plaque on it.
This is
where stuff went down.
Check this cool thing out.
Yeah.
There you have a... excuse me. Yeah. Anyway, it burned down 80% of downtown.
Wow.
And it was this little quaint little town before. So
is your headphone cutting out at all, or is that just mine?
I think it's just you.
Okay, so I'm gonna play with that while we're doing the thing. That's what it sounds like. I'm gonna shut up. You're gonna shut up. We're gonna play some. You're gonna play something
along with the Kinsey report.
Yeah, we're gonna learn about sex
from the 1950s.
From the 50s, 50s sex. Very wholesome.
You're making it sound dirty for some reason.
That's just my sinuses. It's really dry out.
It's really dry in here.
We're going to just do a quick minute of Dilla while I hook up Leaf and hit play on this record. And
okay.
Stay tuned, everyone. This is the wonderful and frightening world of Patrick Michaelishan on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg.
When the Kinsey report on men came out, I remember sitting on one of the buses in New York City, and a lady next to me was reading it with great interest. I couldn't help but nudge her and say, "Tell me, what do you think of the Kinsey report?" She said, "Well, it has no plot, but plenty action. But you're going to find that the Kinsey report has a great deal of plot. And tonight, that's what I would like to do, unravel what the plot is. Not just the statistics. I don't wish to rehash for you what you may have already read about certain statistical findings about what sex activity is among women or men. And tonight I am going to combine the findings of Kinsey on both men and women and show what you can learn from them. We might ask, of course, what is the value of the Kinsey report? The great, great value, and I hope you will never forget it, is not in his statistics at all. And I hope you will not ask me, do you believe that his findings of 26% of those who are having extramarital relationships is valid? I don't think it is. I don't come into that. I don't behave like that. I don't think it's important whether it's 26% or 50% or 6.3% or 6.9%. The great value of the Kinsey report, ladies and gentlemen, is that it has taken sex out of the cellar, out of the darkness, and it has brought it out into the open where we can sit down and discuss it intelligently, where all at once a little sunshine can fall, where heretofore a great mass of dark ignorance has existed. And if it can make a subject so important as sex functioning and sex habits in human beings talked about, at least then we may come to some conclusions that perhaps we never could have had in any other way. And I believe that Kinsey will go down as a saint in history for having made that one single contribution. It is really very unimportant. how valid or how correct or whether you believe in his particular statistical interpretations or research. As far as we're concerned, the fact that we can talk about it, that I can stand here now before you and bring up such items as masturbation, extramarital relationships, premarital relationships, petting, homosexuality, and discuss it honestly and fearlessly is immediately a great, great thing. Now, please remember that Kinsey and his group are scientists. They're not legislators. They're not sociologists. They're not telling you what is right or what is wrong. They are merely saying, let us see what is happening. What is going on? What are human beings really doing in their sex behavior? Not what we think should be, not what we say should be, but what is happening. And then after presenting these facts as scientists, after all, they're only facts, and it has been a very, very upsetting thing to find certain vested groups who begin to condemn Kinsey's findings because they deal with sex. It's like condemning a certain fact about a fruit fly. But if it exists, it exists. Kinsey then says, here, educators, sociologists, doctors, teachers, mothers, fathers, here are the facts. Here is what is happening. Stop being an ostrich. This is what is going on. Now, will you, educators, will you, mothers, fathers, teachers, doctors, set up a program now that is intelligent and realistic and that faces the facts as they are? This is the only thing Kinsey is really saying. He is not saying do this or do that, or because this is so, everybody should do this. He is merely presenting what is, gives you the truth. The amount of ignorance about sex is fantastic, simply fantastic. And as a matter of fact, every one of you sitting here tonight is too old for this program. You should have been here when you were 10, 11, 12. You are much too old right now, because you're going to find in a few minutes that your attitudes about sex and your particular outlook about it has been formed a long, long time ago. And it is amazing how we think and believe certain things about sex. Now, listen to these figures. These are not Kinsey's, but they're nevertheless very accurate. 98% of all people in America are sexual cripples. That's right, 98%. There are very few people who are those artists of life who can live with and enjoy sex as God meant them to. Most of us struggle and suffer under sex like a donkey under a burden. And if the animals in the forest could see how we behave and how we think and how we feel about sex life, they would sit down and chatter and laugh and bemoan how sick these poor human beings must be. Our minds are filled with lies, distortions, stupid beliefs, and things that crush us in our particular attempt to adjust sexually. Would you believe it if I tell you, and this is true, so help me, this is true, a 46-year-old married man stopped me when I was giving this talk, and he said to me, you know, you should have explained your terms. I always thought the difference between autosexual and homosexual was that autosexual means you do it in an auto, and homosexual, you do it at home. Notice, ladies and gentlemen, how many sex cripples we have. When the moment we begin to talk about sex, how some people shrivel up and they begin to become embarrassed and upset. And they feel themselves going, little butterflies floating around. They feel they'd like to cover themselves with a mask and sit and listen, a little mask. Notice how even the schools, how blind they have made themselves. They think if they take a statue and put a fig leaf on it, there's nothing underneath the fig leaf. But believe me, everything is still there as it was before. If you don't believe it, take a look under the fig leaf next time and see. And this is the great fig leaf delusion, that if you do not speak about something, then it doesn't exist at all. No wonder one woman said to me, she said, do you realize what the percentage of sex maniacs is? It is one out of every man. The word sex to most people is a synonym for dirt. A dirty thing is what sex generally represents them. And if you saw that magnificent movie, Moulin Rouge, I was so impressed with that scene where a woman comes into the gallery and looks at one of Toulouse-Lautrec's paintings. And she says the picture, the portrait showed a lady with a man standing there and in a state of undress. And she looked at the picture, what a disgusting picture. Just look at that woman undressing in her bedroom with a man standing there. What a disgusting, dirty picture. When Toulouse-Lautrec came over to her and said, "Madam, this woman is not undressing. She is dressing. The man standing there is her husband. He is waiting to take her to their son's 25th anniversary party. You will do me a great service if you will not let your dirty mind look at my lovely paintings." And this is exactly what we have in this whole area of sex. Let us take a look tonight at reality. If you are squeamish about hearing the truth about sex practices, I suggest that you lift yourself right up now and go home and turn on Howdy Doody. Let's take the first question. At what age does sex activity begin? Of course, most people think it begins when you get to be about 92 or so, according to the educational system. But it may interest you to learn that Kinsey reports that sex activity begins in infancy. And as a matter of fact, this confirms for the first time on a mass basis the thesis of Dr. Sigmund Freud, who is the founder of psychoanalysis, that sex life begins virtually at birth. And Kinsey, in fact, reports that a complete orgasm, now you know what I mean by an orgasm, you will forgive me if I define each word as I go along. I assume nothing anymore. Since that autosexual homosexual, I insist on explaining everything. As a matter of fact, in one of my college classes, I once was talking about orgasm, and it occurred to me maybe somebody didn't know what it meant. So I said, "How many of you do not know what I mean by orgasm?" Well, nobody raised his hand. I said, "How many of you do know?" Nobody raised his hand. An orgasm, ladies and gentlemen, refers to the sexual climax. It refers to the discharge that one feels after accumulation of sexual tension, and the discharge or the release of the entire sexual feeling is spoken of as an orgasm. The closest thing I know that physically to it is a sneeze. You feel a sneeze, tickle, and suddenly... But do you ever know how it feels when you can't sneeze and you want to? Look how much trouble we can get from a little sneeze here, huh? Well, Kinsey reports that a complete orgasm, now listen, a complete orgasm, except for ejaculation, has been observed in a 5-month-old male infant. I can just see the mother looking at him and saying, "Just like his father." Also been observed, a complete orgasm in a girl infant of only 4 months. Not like her mother at all, you say. Pre-adolescents, that is children who are under 12 years old, before 12 years old, have a capacity for a frequency of sex orgasm that is greater than most adults. And one boy, less than 12, was observed to experience 26 orgasms within 24 hours when sexually aroused. Reckon with. As a society, ladies and gentlemen, we are trying hardest to regulate the sex behavior of young people. We don't know how difficult that is. Because contrary to the popular belief, the male is sexually most active in his late adolescence, not in his 20s and 30s. That single fact is loaded with trouble. Since we must deal with males in a realistic way, we must therefore handle this explosive sex drive in his teens. The average boy who's too young for approved sex experience, in marriage that is bursting with sexual energy naturally breaks the rules. Of course, that's what makes it so interesting, since Kinsey finds that a boy reaches his peak of sex life between 17 and 18, that is, his greatest drive. When we announce talks on sex, we always say, "Children under 18 not admitted." The boy of 18 stands at the door and bangs, "Let me in, I'm at my peak, let me in!" What most influences your sex life? In women, 2 major things. 1, when were you born? If you were born before 1900, then you have a different influence and a different outlook and practice in your sex life than if you were born in the decade after 1910, 1920. After World War I, there were many influences in American life to change one's sex attitude. The impact of Sigmund Freud, the effect of war on sex, the intermingling of classes, the problem of prostitution, one's attitude towards petting and premarital coitus. By the way, coitus also means intercourse. The attitude towards petting and premarital coitus is certainly more relaxed if you were born after 1900 than if you were brought up before 1900. The second important factor is how religious are you? If you are a devout Jew or Christian, then you have more taboos than those who are not so devout. Most of our sex codes are derived from the old Jewish Talmud, which prohibits any sex activity which do not promote procreation. What is the sin of Onan? It is not masturbation, as most people think. It's called the sin of Onanism. It's not masturbation at all. Onan was a man who had to have sex relations with his brother's wife when his brother died to increase the birth rate. But Onan spilled his seed upon the ground, and Onan was stoned to death. And the old Jewish Talmud says that any sex activity, masturbation, homosexuality, any activity that does not increase reproduction or help procreation is wrong and sinful. Religious women are therefore less likely to have premarital relations or extramarital relations, but once they start, it has been found that they continue along at the same pace as everybody else. Now, by premarital, I mean sex activity before marriage, premarital. By extramarital, I mean sex activity with others after marriage. Now, that is extracurricular activities. With men, the thing that influences your sex life most is the educational class to which you were born. If you have gone as far as grade school or high school or college, then your attitudes towards sex, when you start and what particular activities and outlets you have, will be different if you're a grade school graduate, a high school graduate, or a college graduate. With women, this makes no difference at all, since women of all educational classes have been found to be pretty much alike. That is, no major differences. How widespread is petting? American youths, ladies and gentlemen, ask more questions and seek information on their petting than perhaps any other aspects of sex. The great problem, as parents and teachers, is how to advise them. How far shall you pet? Shall you pet? Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? How far should you go? First, let us see what is going on, shall we? By 15 years of age, or the second year high school, 39% of the girls say that they've petted. By the time they're 18, 81% of them have had experience, on the average of once a week. Among single American women, it's the most popular of all kinds of sex activity. The boys start petting around 13 years of age, the girls at 15 and 16. Notice, please, the girls seem to mature sexually earlier, but this does not mean that they have the ability to respond earlier, too. The boys mature later, but start earlier in their activity. 99% of all girls who were born after 1900 pet. 91% of those who were born before 1900 pet. The question, of course, is, what is petting? Where does petting begin and pregnancy end? You see. Now, a girl may say, I gave birth, but all I did was pet. It depends, of course, on your definition. It can range from simple kissing, hugging, and general bodily contact to those deep kissing, tonsil exchange affairs. And even genital and breast contacts. Of course, once a girl has had coitus, she accepts all of these petting techniques more readily. Petting apparently turns out to be a very old indoor sport, and it dates back to ancient history and is not an invention of Americans at all. Kinsey says that most girls first learn to understand heterosexual experience. Let me define the term. Heterosexual means with the opposite sex. Homosexual means with the same sex. Kinsey says that most girls first learn to understand heterosexual experience through petting, not through their mothers,
not through their teachers, not through their biology classes, but through petting, where they get their first initial contact. This introduces a girl to far more than just orgasm, and it introduces her to the problems of adjusting to another person and slowly learning sexual techniques. After all, how do you learn anything? In gradual steps. Even sex must be learned. It isn't something... You see, with a dog, you don't have to teach a dog a thing. The dog knows, it's instinctive. But the human being, a great deal of it is learned. It seems that the most satisfying petting is carried to the point of orgasm. Not intercourse, but the point of orgasm. And if not, one of the greatest advantages of petting is that it does provoke a great deal of nervous upset and inability to concentrate. The person becomes bodily aroused. It's only natural that you keep building the body up to a point and then leave it there, that it's going to remain upset and congested, which, of course, is what happens. Let's look at this problem. How many men and women have premarital intercourse? That is, intercourse before they are married. In our society, we say only intercourse in marriage is right and approved. And anybody who does otherwise is sinful, illegal, and if he gets caught, God help him. This is our attitude. What are the facts, however? Notice, please, the laws are that, the teaching is that, the clergymen preach that, but what are the facts? The facts are that nature creates a very strong sex drive in the individual that reaches maturity at a very early age. Between 12 and 15, you become sexually mature. But nobody gets married between 12 and 15. Although, you see, nature never knew about marriage to begin with. Nature never heard of marriage. Because if it did, it would be another story. It would make you sexually active at the point where you're ready to be married. Nature is interested in one thing. Increase the race. Because if nature heard of marriage, then nobody could become pregnant unless he were married. But you know, it's perfectly possible to become pregnant without being married. Did you know that? Well, I'm glad you came tonight, I'll tell you that. And if nature had heard about marriage first as a prerequisite, then every sperm cell, before it would travel one inch, would say, let's see the license, please, let's see the license. Is this trip necessary? So you see, our nature on one hand creates a strong drive. The law, on the other hand, sets up prohibitions, taboos, and naturally, we're going to have great, strong conflicts. The drive between desire and the law. And anyone who can solve the problem of integrating the demands, the sex demands of the individual on one hand and the law on the other, will go down in history as a saint. I'm working on it. I like the sound of the word Saint Banks. With all the teachings, with all the laws, with all the taboos, with all the religion, and with all the fear, what is really taking place? 50% of the women in the Kinsey sample experienced coitus in the year or two before they were married. A great portion of them, of course, confined it to their fiancés. But 50% of all women had sex activity 1 to 2 years before they were married. Of the girls who married by the time they were 20, 50% had premarital intercourse. By the time they're 26 to 30 years of age, 40 to 60% had premarital intercourse. With how many men did they have affairs? Of those who did, 53% had intercourse with only one man before marriage. 34% with 2 to 5 partners. 13% with 6 or more. I think I know that 13% very well, you know. If this shocks you, born before 1900, your generation had less than half the number of premarital affairs than the generation born 10 years ago. This rate, by the year 1954, there will be no more virgins left in America. That is not a recommendation, it's only a fact I'm pointing out. The double standard is beginning to turn into a single standard. Now, what are the facts about sex in marriage? First, let it be clear that the thing that holds a marriage together is not sex. Please don't get that idea. The thing that holds a marriage together is emotional maturity and
and the will to stay married. This is the future of marriage. How important is sex to marriage? If you will conceive of a long chain in which sex is one link of the chain, you will have the strength of sex in marriage. Of course, if that link is broken, the whole chain will break. But don't get to the point where you begin to think that that one link is the entire chain. It is not so. The thing that makes a marriage succeed is emotional maturity. It is amazing how much better sex adjustments are made by emotionally mature people, by those little children who insist on becoming married. Two-thirds of all married women report some sex difficulty in their life at one time or another. This would mean that to have sex difficulty two-thirds, it would be divorcing. Obviously, those who are divorcing over sex are beginning to project other failures into their sex life. Now, how often do married couples have intercourse? People like to know how they compare with others. What are the general figures according to age groups? Here they are. These are general figures. At age 20, married couples have intercourse approximately 3.9 times per week. It doesn't mean that it's one-tenth short. Some people think they go just so far and stop, and that's 0.9. It means some weeks four times, some weeks three times. By age 30, married couples have intercourse 2.9 times per week. They dropped off one night for television, here you say. At age 40, 2.2 times per week. At age 50, 1 a week. At age 60, 0.9. Please do not take these figures as an indication of what is normal. Because it is normalcy or frequency is a highly individual matter. 14% of the women at age 20 were having, listen to this, 14% of the women at age 20 were having coitus 7 times a week, although the average is 3.9. And in every age group, from the teens through 40, some women had coitus 4 times daily every day. The question I want to ask is, when do they get time for the housework? Notice, please, how great the variation is. If a husband does not have relations with his wife more than once a night, is he sexually weak? Now, this is a question I want to hit hard right now. It is amazing how much nonsense people believe about this, too, about frequency. It is common practice for bachelors who have premarital relations to see how many times they can consummate the act during an all-night liaison. This is a little boy attitude that is best forgotten when marriage is entered. Please don't confuse frequency with virility. Marital relations should be had only as frequently as really desired. A husband who has intercourse but once a week can actually be more truly virile than one who tries three times a night. There are some who are so worried about their virility, especially men, you know, worried about their virility, that as based on frequency, they talk to their friends, my God, with him so often, with me, I better switch to seafood. You hadn't heard about that, had you? By the way, speaking of how often married couples have intercourse, they tell about one married man who read the Kinsey Report and found out he wasn't getting his share. How quickly in marriage do you, this is an important one, and especially for newlyweds, how quickly in marriage do you learn to enjoy sex? In the first year of marriage, 75% of the women report having orgasm. After 20 years of marriage, 90% of the women reported having orgasm, which means that 10% of married women have not attained orgasm. By the way, it is perfectly possible to become pregnant without ever having an orgasm. Many people think that one goes with the other. Responsiveness does increase with the years. A woman is most ardent between 31 and 40. Now, we'll see why in a few minutes. Why is this?
Why is a woman's responsiveness so much lower at the in her earlier years? If your sex response slackens, ladies, after 40, it is not your sex
some tea. That night she drew a portrait of me.
very specific.
Hey.
Furniture designers. Who could that be?
I know a couple.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just letting everyone know that they're listening to the wonderful and frightening world of Patrick Michaelishan. The Mystery Plane with Still Life and Black Moth Super Rainbow with Good When It Fades was the songs that you heard that I played. And then
I like
Leif
that.
Norman did...
That was the Nozoid MMO3 going through a Strymon Night Sky and listening to the Kinsey Report. That, why do people from the 1950s sound like that? They always sound like that. What? They always talk out of the back of their throat. Is it the microphones?
I think it's the microphones.
What the? No one talks like that.
That's crazy. Apparently, if you want to sound vintage and old time, you just got to get like a paper tube, like a toilet paper tube.
Well, you just talk like this. Well, I'm on the radio now.
Well, it works. Even doing it through your hands, maybe it doesn't need to be
going
paper.
Going to my hands.
Well, I think the toilet paper tube was from it was Adam West on Family Guy, where he's like, "Do I sound like I'm on old time radio?"
Yeah. It's totally.
Yeah. So I think I kind of cracked this. Like, the filter, you can kind of, like, control how much filter you have. Mm-hmm. And then this thing controls the slope of the filter and then, like, how intense it is. So you can kind of get some cool thing there. This is, like, the refresh speed.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, now it's kind of normal. But then if I slow it down, it kind of, like, picks up or drops off stuff.
Oh, it's droppy.
Yeah, this one's dropping, and this one is, like, taking old packets and, like, reintegrating them.
Mm-hmm.
And then this thing is the reverb, which you can put before or after with the switch, and then it's how much you want it to, like, fall apart.
Make it fall apart the maximum. It just goes to fuzz? That's cool. Yeah, you should just do for your gig, just use these two things, and then just do that.
I need
a bit of reverb on it, though. Need a little bit of reverb on the whole thing. Room
like
it up a bit.
Yeah, I think the rooms is what I'd bring. I've been watching that, and then it's got like an alternate mode where the top three, like the three modulation knobs, you can basically reset. So when you click it, it can either do like a crazy warp or a crazy subtle thing. Especially if you have the reverb tails on like extremely obnoxiously long and then have them shrink down, you can hear that reverb just kind of get like
it goes
sucked right back in.
Yeah, they make those weird noises.
That's kind of dope. I'm excited. So did this remix that you're doing for James, did he give you like the stems for the songs?
Oh, no, I'm just totally like, he just gave me the chords.
I'm
totally from scratch. I'm totally doing it from scratch.
What about, so you're just covering it?
Yeah, I'm just kind of covering
it. So you're going to sing it yourself too?
Yep.
And is this for just like a digital release that he's doing?
We're just goofing around.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, so I'm going to do, Novation Peak arpeggiator program through a Keystep Pro and the, whatever it's called, the analog rhythm.
Now, with the
The analog rhythm too.
With the Keystep Pro, can you control with one keyboard different channels with CV? Like, are there CV for each oscillator or no?
There are CVs, but that's more, I think that's more for drum junk. It's MIDI. It's kind of more MIDI controlling.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, did you see that, speaking of, is it Electron that does the rhythm?
Yeah, it's Electron.
You see that they put out the Digitect 2?
I don't know. Is that cool?
It's, Digitect is like one of those things that everyone's kind of obsessed about because it does everything, but now they have a new one that's got like stereo sound. It's basically, so the people are selling off their ones. It was like when the Teenage Engineering OP1 came out and people were like, I'll sell
or
my
the Mood 2.
Or the Mood 2. I still love that I have my Mood 1 too.
Mood,
they're both
Mood 1
phenomenal pedals.
With its ugly paint job color.
It's ugly, and I know that they put out the light bright edition of the Mood 2, the black one with all the rainbow sprinkles on it.
Lose their mind.
But I don't know. You know what? I got the OGs. I'm kind of happy with that. Variants are variants, but ultimately, who's looking at your setup? Unless you're a YouTuber with a camera down.
I know.
Anyways, I'm so glad that you came back. Ride your bike over to my place sometime if you want to like hang out and, I don't know, have a fizzy water, or you can bring a beer or whatever in the back.
Have a fizzy water and burn some cardboard in the backyard?
Well, not even cardboard, just cardboard. Because remember my old music room had that cabinet up in the corner?
Mm-hmm.
That's just down in pieces in my back room, so I got to
burn it up.
Take it out back, chop it up.
And you still have my ladder, don't you?
I still have your ladder.
My big folding ladder is in your back room there. I hope.
Yeah. I hope so, too. I think it is. I think it's leaned up against the wall.
All right.
Yeah, you might have to bring a car then.
Well, definitely. Yeah.
Did I bring it back?
No.
No, it's still in my house. All right.
You still have it. You should. Yeah, we got to get the Vespa.
Yeah, we do.
Got to clean that Vespa out, man. Come on.
And I got to figure out how I'm going to get that into my space. I'm getting the deep freeze there first, and then once the deep freeze is tucked into that room, I can figure out where I'm going to put a scooter.
Just get a ramp.
That's what I'm thinking.
You need a ramp going up the back steps.
Yeah. What a pain in the butt. Anyways, man, I'm going to walk you out. I know you got stuff to do in the morning. It's time for Compulsory Ken. This is Hunters and Collectors on the wonderful and frightening world of Patrick Michaelishan here on CKUW 95.9 FM.